from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia. Online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, West Virginia is one step closer to becoming a right-to-work state after a vote on the Senate floor. And members of the House of Delegates will take up another union-opposed bill next week, a repeal of the state's prevailing wage. The minority leaders of both chambers join us to discuss these controversial bills and others they'll propose to the GOP majority. That conversation and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. We start in the Senate tonight, where members spent nearly 2 hours debating a single bill, the West Virginia Workplace Freedom Act. The bill is West Virginia's version of right to work. It would protect workers from being fired for choosing to join or not join a union, but also says those non-union workers cannot be forced to pay fees that unions currently collect to cover the cost of representation they provide in contract negotiations. Those opposed to the bill say without those fees, unions will struggle to pay for the pensions and health care benefits their workers have been promised. Here's a look at the debate on the floor today.
Before discussing precisely what the bill does, I want to mention a few things that it does not do. This bill does not in any way prohibit collective bargaining. The bill does not prevent any person from joining a union if he or she chooses to do so. It preserves and expressly preserves that freedom. The bill does not and would not affect any existing collective bargaining agreements. What this bill does do is simply enshrine into law, into the law of our state, a fundamental principle of freedom. The freedom that a person may not be compelled to join a union or to pay dues to a union as a condition of having a job.
GSA chairman said there will be that the WVU, Pristine University, that report says there will be an uptick in the economy and there will be a lowering of unemployment. Wow, that sounds great to me. You've got my attention. But I'm going to tell you the whole truth. The whole truth is that report said that uptick, lowering unemployment and increasing the possibility that we will grow in West Virginia and grow our economy is 0.4%, less than 0.5% uptick. The downside in that report, and all we had many speakers from a different vantage, all agreed that when other states went to right to work, their state's overall pool of wages went down 17%.
What are we saying if we pass this legislation? We're saying that all the problems of the state of West Virginia, without us taking any blame for it, all the problems in the state of West Virginia are on the backs of working men and women because it is their fault we have this issue. We're saying that we're going to pass this legislation, and this bothers me as much as anything, we're going to pass this legislation today without even a full body of members here to address this issue. Every district has two senators, except the 9th district here today. Every district has two senators to address this issue. It's unfair to the people of the 9th district, and I contend that it's unfair from the senator from Raleigh County to have to be the only one to speak for 109,000 people. I don't know how the court rules. I can't take care of that. But it's unfair that we push this through today with Newspeak, what we are wanting to pay people, what we're wanting to do people, when we're not all even here to do it.
But the one thing that I've not heard discussed thus far is a word that I've heard as I've traveled through my district, as I've had conversations with people back home, and that's hope. Our people right now are struggling because they feel there is no hope. Our kids feel like there's no hope because there's no jobs. With the decline in our mining industry, the situation that we're having in the northern oil and gas fields, we just have to look around throughout West Virginia. Businesses are closing. Why? Because they feel there's no hope. Change is hard, but change is necessary. Change is necessary now.
People who support right to work, they're out working. The free riders are right up there.
Chamber will be in order.
What the unions have done as it relates back to Newspeak is the UAW forced members of the UAW to support Planned Parenthood, even though many of their members are Christian people who are opposed to that issue. What we saw in Wisconsin whenever they recently passed right to work was a reduction in union membership, but what does that represent? That represents people who were tired of being misrepresented by the union. So they dropped out. Now that doesn't mean that it destroyed the union. Unions still exist in Wisconsin. And in some states, for example, Indiana, the fastest growing union membership in the country is in Indiana, which is a right to work state. So right to work does not kill unions, but what it does do is it forces unions to represent the members in a real way and not in a contrived way.
You know, back home in the country where I come from, there's a saying that some people use that a lie well told and stuck to is better than the truth. That's what we just heard. As members of this body, shame on any one of us who disrespects the people who come down here to represent what is near and dear to their heart. And I want to apologize to every one of you for that. Now look, whenever we start trying to get political gains off the backs of the people that are only if guilty of one thing, trying to go to work, make a living, and do the right thing, shame on us. We've lost our real purpose of being here. Our purpose of being here is to represent everybody, to try to make everybody a better lifestyle and life. And what we're witnessing here today is the dismantling of the working class of this state and these United States, and I certainly apologize to you people for that.
This does not prevent anyone from joining a union. Does not prevent anyone from joining a union. Does not prevent anyone from paying union dues. Does not outlaw collective bargaining. What is the problem with this bill? You've got evidence, PhD economists, that say it will create jobs, improve income, not reduce wages, and create more state product for West Virginia, versus opinions that say might hurt, could be scary. What we're doing now is not working. It's been said over and over and over. What we are doing now does not work. We're last. And so we come to this.
party line vote of 17-16. The House Government Organization Committee approved a bill yesterday that would repeal the state's prevailing wage, the hourly wage rate and benefits workers are paid on state construction projects. The bill hasn't had its first reading yet, but as Liz McCormick reports, House Democrats are still trying to slow it down.
In 2015, a bill aimed at repealing the prevailing hourly wage rate in West Virginia caused an uproar from Democrats in both chambers of the legislature, so much so that leadership decided to rethink a full repeal and passed a compromised version that called for a recalculation of the rate. This year, House leadership is once again proposing a repeal of the wage rate, and the bill is on the fast track, making it back to the House floor just a week into this legislative session. On the floor today, Delegate Isaac Spanagel, a Democrat from Pendleton County, tried to keep the bill from moving forward by asking for a fiscal note, a report that tells lawmakers what the economic impact of a piece of legislation will be. Members discussed the relevance of the request at the House Speaker's podium for 15 minutes before House Speaker Tim Armstead rejected Spanagel's request.
First of all, I believe that the motion is untimely and that the rule requires a request for a fiscal note to be made before the bill is considered by committee or on the House floor. This bill has already made its way through the committee and brought to the House floor today as a committee report. There's certainly a debate that will likely take place on the House floor as to the economic impact of this legislation. At the same time, the bill in and of itself and the language of the bill does not increase a tax. It does not specifically and expressly change revenue sources coming in to a state or county. It may have the impact of doing that, and that will certainly be, I'm sure, a subject of debate on the House floor, but the bill itself does not have a tax increase, a tax decrease, or any type of fee increase or decrease that would specifically require that it be sent to an agency for a fiscal note. So for those reasons, it's the ruling of the chair that the gentleman's motion is out of order.
The House will likely vote on the prevailing wage bill sometime next week. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Prevailing wage, right to work, both are contentious bills that my guests tonight have spoken out against. Joining me in the studio are the minority leaders of both chambers this evening, Senator Jeff Kessler and Delegate Tim Miley. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here.
Good evening, Ashton.
Thank you for having us.
Senator, let's start with you. You gave a passionate speech on the floor tonight that we didn't get to see in the earlier piece, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to share your reaction to the Senate's vote today on the right to work bill.
Well, it's a continuation of the new Republican leadership's attack on workers and working families in this state. You know, this bill is, they call it a workplace freedom bill, but in fact, I think it's more akin to work free is in there because I think it is a free loader bill because since 1947, the Taft-Hartley Labor Act has required all unions to represent in their collective bargaining unit all members of that collective bargaining unit. So in effect, what this work would do, or this bill would do, would actually let people who don't pay their dues get the benefit of, you know, the labor negotiations without having to pay for it. I belong to my state, our local chamber of commerce back home. I can't, to belong, I've got to pay my dues every year. Same with a country club. If you want to golf down there, you got to be a member. You got to pay your dues. This bill will let you not belong to something, but still get the benefit. So it's an attack on unions. It's for political purposes, in my view, to weaken unions who have historically been very politically active.
Delegate, this bill will now come to the House. The Speaker last night was here on the show and spoke in support of the legislation, but we've seen Republicans in the House split on some issues in the past. Forced pooling is an example. That vote went 49-49 in the House last year, and they lost that bill. Could this bill be an issue for a majority party and for the majority party in your chamber?
Ashton, I think most, if not every Democratic member of the House will vote against it. We might lose one, maybe two, but probably only one if that. And we will get some Republicans to join us. Now, how many, I don't know. And I don't know if it's going to be enough to kill the bill. But there's no question there will be bipartisan opposition to that bill and very little bipartisan support for it in the House.
Why do you think there's bipartisan opposition? Do you think it's people are afraid to put that vote up on the board in an election year?
No, I think it's the Republicans who will vote against the right to work bill understand what it is and what it will do. the people who will vote for it believe in some pipe dream that it's going to somehow be the silver bullet to create economic prosperity in our state, when everybody knows who has studied the issue that that won't happen. I mean, it only affects 8 to 10% of our workforce anyway. That's all that organized labor makes up of our workforce. So we're passing this bill to make to allow people to get the benefits of organized labor, which only makes up 8 to 10% of our workforce anyway. It's not going to do a thing to create one new job or bring one new business in our state.
So we saw in the chamber today that the House will take a vote on this prevailing wage issue, a repeal of the state's prevailing wage. The GOP says a repeal will save taxpayer dollars. Where do you stand on this issue?
Well, I'm against repealing the prevailing wage law. Over the summer, the off-season we've had, there were studies done by Workforce West Virginia and surveys done with a response rate of over 70%. And it was clear, based upon those facts and figures that were returned, no savings will be recognized. In fact, during the period of time this past year, when there was no prevailing wage in place, there were several contracts let out to bid. And there was no indication, well, it was clear, there was no meaningful savings whatsoever. So this garbage of being able to build 5 schools for the price of 3 if prevailing wage was repealed is nonsense, and it's just not true. And the facts don't bear that out. Facts don't support that.
Senator, last year you stood on the floor and said that you had heard from both labor and business against this repeal. What are you hearing from your constituents now?
Same thing. I'm more vocal. I mean, again, everyone wants to say this is a labor issue. It's not. There are local businessmen in my community, contractors that have been there for and throughout the state for 100 years. I had a stack an inch thick of letters from hospitals, from contractors, from small businessmen, from their own roofing companies, plumbing companies, said, don't do it, you're hurting us. I don't know why this new Republican majority is so dead set on driving wages down in this state. And I've heard it said they love jobs so much, all they want to do is talk about jobs, but they want to drive the wages down so far that everyone has to have 2 or 3 to get by. I mean, that's the wrong way to go. We should be spending our time not on divisive issues that, as the leader mentioned, only affect a small, minute portion of our workforce. We should be working on improving our education system. We should be worried about improving broadband, improving our roads, fixing our roads, improving our workforce participation, things that truly will move our state forward. These divisive issues to just go after a group for political reasons is absolutely not only divisive to the state, it will not move us forward.
Let's move on to the budget and talk about the revenue issues that the state is seeing. The governor is calling for some tax increases, a creation of a new tax, an increase to the state tobacco tax to help the state out. Now, Delegate, you said last week the House Democrats support a tobacco tax increase, but one that's larger than what the governor is calling for. Can you tell us about what you all will support in the House?
Sure. We will only support a large enough increase in the tobacco tax such that it fully funds the PEIA shortfall. Even the proposal that was set forth by the governor doesn't fully fund the shortfall of PEIA. It funds 80 to 90% of it. But we support a complete funding of the PEIA shortfall, as well as funding other things such as substance abuse and smoking cessation programs. And we're not supporting any cigarette tax unless it's at least $1 per pack, because we can't lose sight of the benefits of our citizens' health by doing that. The empirical data shows you raise the cigarette tax significantly, such as $1, you will reduce the number of smokers, therefore you'll reduce the number of smoking-related illnesses, and you'll reduce the smoking-related illness health care costs that are required to treat those illnesses. And so we can't talk about it just solely from the point of raising money, but we have to also recognize the benefit that will incur to our citizens as far as their health goes.
Now, Senator, the governor has said that this $1 increase that that House Democrats are pushing for will hurt those border counties that see income from out of state. You've pushed for a $1 increase in the past. Where do you stand on this issue today?
At the end of the day, I think my caucus would support an increase. I also think that there is elasticity in the markets. I'm sensitive to the fact that there are border counties, particularly up in the northern panhandle between Ohio and Pennsylvania. A dollar increase would still make us cheaper than Ohio and Pennsylvania. Whether it would a nickel difference or whatever would drive more business here? Probably not, not with the price of gas being what it is. So I don't know, but there is elasticity in that weather, and I think you can get more out of it than the, certainly than the 45 cents and dedicate it again to PEIA and some of the pressing issues we have in this state, substance abuse and also improving our workforce. I've suggested last year with the bill, you know, to take $15 or $20 million and put it to a free community, assisted community college or apprenticeship program for every one of our kids when they graduate high school. We got the lowest college and post-high school attainment education rates in the country. We need to get every one of our kids that are graduating it with a skill, whether it's in a welding skill or in a nursing home assistant or a nurse's aide or a paralegal, get them all with some sheepskin behind their name so that they become employable and marketable. And that's when folks will come here. That's what they're looking for, a skilled, trained, and educated and sober workforce.
Delegate, the speaker has said that he will not support a telecommunications tax increase. It's a tax on cell phones and landlines. The governor wants that money to balance this year's budget and next year's budget. Where do the House Democrats stand on an issue like that?
Well, the House Democrats are opposed to that. And the reason why we support a cigarette tax increase versus the cell phone tax increase is that with cigarette tax increases, people choose whether or not they want to pay that tax. Now, these days, everyone has a cell phone, and to impose a tax on everyone is we think is unfair. At least a cigarette tax is more of a user fee that if you choose to use or embark on smoking cigarettes, you've chosen to pay that tax. You can choose not to pay that tax, just don't smoke. So we're against the cell phone tax. So I guess there is bipartisan opposition to the governor's bill in that regard. There was a comment made in our caucus, though, that if that tax was dedicated to funding broadband, the build out of broadband in our state, then perhaps there might be some support for it. But a general tax on the cell phone usage or the telecommunications tax is not going to get any support from the Democrats in the House.
Senator, in the minute or so that we have left, I want to talk about the situation in the Senate, because here we are tonight and we still are short a member of that caucus. Do you have any predictions? What's going to happen?
I don't have a prediction, but I thought West Virginia beat Texas last night too, but they didn't. So, you know, I'm afraid to do any predicting. I'm cautiously optimistic that the court will rule that and I said the first day on this floor of the session, or the Senate, that the people of this state have elected 17 Democrats in our chamber and 17 Republicans. The only reason President Cole was holding the gavel is that one of our Democrats defected and became a Republican and left us high and dry. Now he's left them high and dry, and so we're in a situation where we're short a member. So I think the will of the people is that a Democrat was elected to that seat, and that's who should be seated in the chamber to give us a full complement of elected representatives.
Senate Minority Leader Jeff Kessler, House Minority Leader Tim Miley, thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to come on.
And tonight, we continue to introduce you to members of the legislature with this look at representatives from Northern West Virginia.
Kent Leonhardt is a member of the West Virginia Senate representing the 2nd District. He's from Monongalia County. A Republican, Leonhardt was elected in 2014. A retired Marine, Leonhardt serves as the chairman of the Senate's Committee on Military and prides himself in his service to his country. Leonhardt is also a farmer raising cattle, sheep, goats, and chickens. William Romine is from Tyler County and represents the state's 6th House of Delegates district. A Republican, Romine was elected in 2000. Delegate Romine is the vice chair of the House Committee on Agriculture. He has also served as a member of the Northern Panhandle Workforce Investment Board and the Doddridge County Economic Development Board. Linwood Woody Ireland represents the House's 7th District from Ritchie County. A Republican, he was elected to the House in 2006. Delegate Ireland serves as the chair of the House's Energy Committee and is on the Ritchie County 4-H Foundation Board. Delegate Ireland owns a farm that's been in his family for 8 generations since 1820. He's worked as an auctioneer since the late 70s.
In In anticipation of severe weather in the Kanawha Valley, the legislature has decided to meet earlier tomorrow morning, but West Virginia Public Broadcasting will still carry those floor sessions live on the West Virginia Channel. Members of the House will gavel in at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, and the Senate will meet at 10. Again, you can watch those live on the West Virginia Channel or on WVPublic.org. And because of that severe weather, we will forego airing a new episode of the legislature today, tomorrow evening. We'll return with our regular legislative coverage on Monday, January 25th, with a special episode dedicated to energy issues at the State House. That episode will air at our regular time, 6:30 p.m., and be rebroadcast that evening at 10:30 and 11:30. At 10 and 11:30. This has been the legislature today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.